Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. This is Mark Levine reporting live from the Center for American Progress in downtown Washington, D.C. Like you, I saw the debate last night, and I'm going to have a full analysis of it tomorrow. I'll just say briefly that I find it shocking that for all the concern we certainly should have over the 14 people dead in San Bernardino, This is something that apparently causes Republicans to be extremely upset about and to go to war over, but 30,000 dead in America every year in the hand of guns, well, that's just another day. So I'm not quite sure why this less than 1%, a tenth of 1% of gun murders in America is precisely what's getting them so angry. That's going to be my topic for tomorrow. But today, this is a non-controversial topic, something that's not political, because, you know, every now and then I get talking with people and I try to sort of understand the way things work. And I must admit, when I first learned about black holes, I thought they were very cool. And no, I'm not talking politics here. I'm talking about actual black holes, scientific black holes. And trying to understand them and figure out what's going on. I thought, you know what? For all the politics that I deal with day in and day out, it's kind of fun once in a while to discuss something entirely non-political, simply educational. And heck, I like to learn. So what better than to use my radio show to learn something and to teach you a little something about astrophysics? So my guest today is a particularly interesting person, a very educated individual. His name is Dr. Carl Gebhardt. He is the Herman and Jones Suit Professor of Astrophysics in the Department of Astronomy at the University of Texas at Austin. And although he works on a variety of galaxy studies, one of his favorite things to learn about, and one of the things he knows most about, in fact, most of his career has been focusing on understanding black holes, and particularly the role that black holes play in the formation of a galaxy. So let's talk science for once. Dr. Gebhardt, thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm happy.
I'm happy you're here, and I expect to learn something today. Well, it'll be just like a college lecture, and this is free to everyone listening in the 40-odd stations across the country. So let me give you my basic layman's understanding of a black hole, okay. And then you could tell me all the places I'm wrong. How about that?
Okay.
So I understand a black hole to be something that is so dense, a mass so dense, like a collapsed star or something of just such huge gravitational force, that it is so strong that it pulls everything into it, even light itself, and that's why it's called a black hole, and that's why we can't see it. We can measure it through but we can't actually see it through light because it pulls everything, including light, into its center core. Is that right, or am I wrong there?
Well, it's almost right, and you've have come across a common misconception. A black
okay.
hole is not like this giant vacuum cleaner that's spinning around sucking things in. For an object to fall into a black hole, you have to kind of go straight into it. So there's a very easy analogy here. If we were to magically take our sun and right now turn it into a black hole, the orbit of the Earth would stay exactly the same. It would get kind of nasty and cold here, and it wouldn't be very good for humans, but the Earth would just happily orbit around the black hole sun forever.
But wouldn't the black hole sun have infinitely greater gravitational mass than our sun, and therefore wouldn't it be like the great space vacuum cleaner?
No. So in this analogy of turning the sun into a black hole, what you would have to do is you have to squeeze the sun down to a very small size. You have to squeeze it down to close to 3 kilometers. And once you squeeze it down to
an entire
size,
sun in 3 kilometers.
Yes.
The sun, which is, I don't know, 1,000 times the size of the Earth, probably larger, collapses into an area closer than the distance between this studio and my home.
Exactly. Then it becomes a black hole.
That's crazy dense.
But if you consider the objects that are far away, for example, like the Earth, it won't have an effect at all on the orbit. It'd be exactly the same.
Huh.
So it's not this giant vacuum cleaner, but you're right. In a sense that if you get into the black hole, then you're trapped there forever.
That's
then you can't
sure.
get out. At least that's what we think.
But in the movies, whenever we see a black hole, we see it as the giant vacuum cleaner. We see it
right.
as the spaceship that can't escape. And
right.
I guess, in essence, it's not really like, and then sometimes in the really crazy movies, it sort of teleports you out somewhere else,
right.
Which is even more ridiculous. But assuming that you did get close to a black hole, I mean, you would just be flattened. All your molecules and atoms would get crazy close together. And if the sun is the size of 3 kilometers, then a human being would presumably be smaller than the point of a needle.
Well, okay, again, there's a common misconception here. You're right. For the smaller black holes, like something like the sun, once a body gets relatively close to it, then there are what's called there are tidal forces that will stretch you apart. You know, it turns you into spaghetti, and it like exactly
stretch you. Wouldn't it shrink you? It, like if you can.
No, it just rips you apart. So you'll be pulled apart atom by atom eventually as you fall into the black hole.
I thought you'd be kind of crushed like a trash compactor.
You will, but you'll be first turned into a long string as you fall into the black hole. You'll be
okay.
like turned into spaghetti and stretched apart that way. So
I get it.
And then you fall in, and then everything falls in together at that point.
Okay.
But it's very interesting. For very large black holes, so these are the ones that I study the ones that are in the middle of galaxies. These black holes are about the size of the solar system, you know, like all the way out to the orbit of Pluto and beyond.
Wow,
size black holes.
So our sun would be 3 kilometers wide, which is a tiny, just 3 kilometers, that's 2 miles. It'd be 2 miles wide, which is a tiny distance when compared to the massive sun. And the one in the centers of solar system would be in the centers of galaxies would be the size of our solar system.
That's right.
So is there a black hole in the center of the Milky Way, our galaxy?
Yes, and it's about 5 million times the mass of our sun.
Is there a black hole in the center of every galaxy?
That's what that's one thing I did with my team back in 2000, the late 1990s, where we used the Hubble Space Telescope. Is we studied a large set of galaxies, and every galaxy we looked at had required a black hole in the center to explain the observation.
And
so we come to the strong conclusion that all galaxies have black holes.
So just like the Earth goes around the sun, because the sun is so much larger than the Earth and has so much gravitational pull, and all the other seven planets go around the sun, similarly, the sun goes around the black hole in the center of the Milky Way because its gravitational pull is so much stronger than the sun itself. Is the analogy right?
No.
No. Okay. No, that's why you're teaching me here. So that's fine.
Okay.
Tell me where I'm wrong.
So our black hole and the black hole in any of the galaxies is a relatively small fraction of the total mass of the galaxy. There's a handful of galaxies out there, well, maybe two or three, where the black hole is quite substantial for the size of the galaxy. But in most galaxies, the black hole mass is about 0.1% of the total mass of the galaxy.
So the black hole is not what keeps the galaxy together? I mean, I've seen the Milky Way, and it looks like kind of a big starfish with lots and lots of curled legs. And,
yep.
and my understanding is that just like the Earth goes around the sun, our sun rotates around the center of the Milky Way. Am I right so far?
That is correct.
Okay, and like over every 250 million years or some enormous amount of time.
Right, some number like that.
The sun makes a revolution around the Milky Way, just like the Earth
right.
makes a revolution around the sun. And if the black hole's in the center of it, I assumed that the black hole was the main mass. But I think, are you telling me the stars around the black hole are the main mass? Or how's it work here?
Collective mass It's the collective mass of the galaxy that is causing us to orbit around the galaxy. And the black hole just happens to live in a very special spot.
In the center.
It's massive, but it's not the one that is determined, that is not, it's not responsible for all the motions of the material in the galaxy.
Is it the exact gravitational center of the galaxy?
Yes.
It is, always.
As far as we can tell, it's exact.
That's your theory.
And so this is why the mass of the black hole, trying to understand the black hole in the middle of the galaxies, why that is so important for trying to understand how you make a galaxy. It's not just that every galaxy has a black hole, but that there's this magic number, this magic 0.1%. For every galaxy, you take 0.1% of its mass, and that is approximately what the value of the black hole is in that galaxy.
Is it always that number? Like pi is always 3.1415926, et cetera, et cetera?
No, it jumps around a bit, but like when we look at galaxies, they're messy. They are fantastically beautiful systems. They come in all shapes and sizes. One thing I do in my classes is one of the first things I do is I just pop up all these beautiful images of galaxies. It's so much fun to take a look at. And because of that, though, trying to understand these things is really messy. These things are complicated. They're merging. They come together at different times.
It might be, you said 0.1% is sort of the average. It could be 1% or it could be 0.1%. Or maybe not even that different.
Not even that big of a range. It's a pretty small range. It's pretty remarkable how stable it is.
So your theory, and of course all scientific theories are things that are based on fact and observed evidence. But is it generally accepted scientific theory that every galaxy has a black hole in the center?
Yeah. So those are the observations.
Okay.
That's what I do. I make observations. I think we're up to about, I would say, 80, 90 galaxies have been observed in enough detail to tell whether it has a black hole or not, and they've all have passed the test. Maybe one, and I'm still working on that one.
Okay, but everyone you've observed that you're sure about has a black hole in the center. So maybe it's the case that the black hole is kind of like, a general. And the black hole controls its kernels. It's like really, it's 1,000 massive stars around it. And then those massive stars control the sergeants who, around it. So maybe even if the black hole isn't controlling the whole galaxy, it's controlling the center stars who are then controlling the next most center stars, kind of like a wheel and spoke system. Is that fair?
That's a good analogy. And, you actually might be onto something there. And I'm gonna try to use that in my classes now as an example.
Oh, great. Will you cite me? You say this radio host from Washington?
Sure. I'll put you on the webpage, on the class page.
All right.
But what we think is going on is that because the black hole sits in the middle, and because in the galaxy there's so much stuff, there's so much gas and dust, so this is the stuff that stars are made of, that material falls into the middle. If there's a black hole there, that material, because it's making a beeline right into the middle of the galaxy, will fall into the black hole. As it falls into the black hole, it creates huge amounts of energy that will push back. And so you try to jam this stuff into the black hole, but the black hole occupies such a tiny space that you can't get all that material in, and then some of that material blows back out in these forms of very powerful jets and winds, and then that stuff is what may control the galaxy itself.
So it is like the kernel, the general controls the colonels, and the colonels control the captains, and
the captains control the sergeants,
and they finally control the troops. Now
it's more like a conductor.
A conductor. The thing about a conductor in an orchestra, that's why I didn't use that analogy, is a conductor in an orchestra really does control everything. I mean, he tells everyone in the woodwinds when to play.
You're right.
That's why I like the army analogy, because the colonel does have some discretion. The captain has some discretion. They control their own troops. It's not the general doesn't issue every order for every one of the million men on the march and tells exactly each individual where to go. But a conductor does. A conductor tells everyone exactly how to play. So I'm going to stick with my military analogy. How am I doing?
Good.
See, I'm ready to teach science now. I do have to take a break, but I'm really enjoying this discussion. I hope you folks are too. And we'll be right back with my guest, Dr. Carl Gebhardt of the University of Texas in Austin, right after this.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My guest is Dr. Carl Gephardt. He's a professor of astrophysics at the University of Texas in Austin. And his expertise is dark matter, dark energy, and black holes. We'll get to dark matter and dark energy in just a second. And if you're saying, wait, Mark, I thought you talked about politics, the answer is yes, I do. But that doesn't mean I can't have an interest in science. So leave me alone. Sit back and listen. You're going to learn something. I've already learned a lot. So, Dr. Gephardt, we were talking about black holes and how they're the center of every single galaxy that you believe that exists, and yep. How they act, and I get credit now for coining the metaphor. They act like the general in the military, the commander-in-chief, as it were, orders his generals to, or her generals to do such things, and then they order colonels, and they order the central stars obey the black hole. And then the other stars sort of obey the central stars and so forth until you get to those renegades and some backwater radius of the Milky Way where our sun exists. How am I doing so far?
That's pretty good. I'm not sure if I'll put that in my next paper, but I will include it in my next lecture.
Fair enough. So now, is our sun like way out deep in the spiral of the Milky Way? I mean, are we really that unimportant?
Yes, we're pretty far. In terms of the universe, we are like utterly insignificant. And in terms of our galaxy, we are towards the edge of the spiral arm. We're not quite I'm at the edge of the disk, but we are pretty far out there. I'm in the Milky Way.
So even it's not even that we're insignificant in the universe. We're insignificant even in the Milky Way.
Right.
Is the Milky Way pretty insignificant in the universe, or are we a pretty important galaxy?
Well, you know, yes, we are insignificant. I mean, so our universe is...
How many galaxies are there? Infinite? I mean, do we know? Is there any way to know?
Yeah, so we know the number of observable galaxies out there. That's about 100 billion.
Wait, 100 billion observable galaxies.
So, and what I mean by that is the galaxies inside the observable universe. We can only see as far as light has been able to travel since the beginning of the universe, since the Big Bang. We can't see beyond that. We know that we strongly expect, based on theoretical arguments, that the universe is effectively infinite. So there's many, many more galaxies out there. But what is available to us on Earth is about 100 billion galaxies.
So there's 100 billion galaxies, and there's, what, a trillion stars in our Milky Way, something like that? More or less?
It's more like 10 billion.
But 10 billion. Only 10 billion. Only 10 billion stars. Yeah, so I'll just do a little bit of math here.
Yeah, let me do it too.
Yeah, so to 10 billion times 100 billion, and we've got 1,000 billion or so stars in the observable universe, and that doesn't include the stuff that we're not observing. So that Big Bang was a pretty big bang.
And that's for sure. But and think about what I always like to think about is that we're finding planets around other stars at an enormous rate. And it looks like that making planets is relatively common. And
I'm sure they're talking about this on some radio show all across in the other nether reaches of the universe in one of the more important stars, maybe, in the Milky Way. Dr. Gephardt, we got to take a little break. We'll be right back after this. Back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking science today instead of politics for a change, which is great because I love to learn, and I've been learning a lot from Dr. Carl Gephardt. He's a professor of astrophysics at the University of Texas in Austin, and his focus is black holes, but also dark matter and dark energy. So, Dr. Gephardt, what the heck is dark matter and dark energy?
Okay, so let me place everything in context of what we're trying to do here, and that will help us understand. So both black holes are dark matter and dark energy, actually.
They're both. So
what we want to do is understand where we come from, and so we have this idea of the Big Bang. So everything explodes out. We want to understand from that point, when you have that Big Bang, how matter comes together eventually, makes a galaxy, how within that galaxy that begins to form stars, how you make the planets and how you make us. That's the general idea here.
Wait, one second. The Big Bang was some infinitely dense point that exploded out. It sounds a lot like a black hole. Was the Big Bang a black hole?
No. At least we don't know. You know,
massive black hole that exploded? I mean, it sounds like it could be. Do black holes explode, or maybe they don't?
Well, black holes evaporate. This is what Stephen Hawking came up with.
They evaporate?
Explosion. They evaporate.
They get smaller over time?
Over time, particle by particle, they will lose their mass over time. And for a black hole that's like in the center of a galaxy, it takes about 100 billion years for the black hole to lose all of its mass by this evaporation.
But wait a minute. It's got infinitely large gravity. How can it lose anything?
It's pretty spectacular idea that Stephen Hawking came up with, and it has to do with quantum mechanical effects that happen just outside of the black hole.
It gets crowded as everyone tries to explode into the center and a few people get thrown. Kind of like if a crowd tries to enter a store on Black Friday and a few people get thrown to the side.
Excellent. That's a good analogy, too. You just can't get all that stuff in there, and every now and then a particle escapes. And as that particle escapes, the black hole has to do some work, and it's losing mass because it's doing work.
It's losing mass because it's doing work, because any energy requires a subtraction of mass. That's Einstein's formula.
Mass. No.
No.
There's an idea.
Okay. I'm totally off here, folks, but I'm trying. Go ahead.
Okay. There's quantum mechanical effects that happen at the edge of the black hole. And this is all the hot topic now. You may have heard of a thing called the firewall, the black hole firewall.
I haven't, but I could pretend to.
I'm sorry?
I said I haven't heard of it, but I could pretend to.
So there's an active debate as, will you lose information inside of a black hole? And that would violate one of the fundamental tenets of physics, that we don't like to lose information.
Lose information? Wait, is that like when I lose my iPhone? What do you mean lose information?
Yes. So if material falls into a black hole, that classically, at least the idea that we have thought for a long time, that is, you can't get that material back out. That means you have taken information away from our universe. We've lost that information.
Information is stuff. It's mass. It's gas. It's star pieces.
It's particles. It's understanding the spin of particles.
And we call that information.
Yeah, we can call it information because it's just a representation of the state of individual particles.
It informs us as to where the particles are. All right, fine, okay. Let's get back to dark energy and dark matter.
Okay, okay. Right.
What the heck are they?
Let's get back to the fun stuff. And so there's a couple huge mysteries out there in the in astronomy and cosmology. One is that we don't understand what most of the matter is in the universe. We believe there's this thing called a dark matter. What we think it is, it's a new particle that we have yet to detect, and it acts like other particles gravitationally, like it will cluster around a galaxy, but it doesn't interact with other particles very well. And so we can't really see it. That's how we see particles, is when they interact with each other, they emit light. And that's the easiest way for us.
They're bumping into each other, and they're like, when they bump into each other, light comes out.
They bump into each other, they excite an electron that is in an individual atom to a higher energy state. That electron falls back down, and as it falls back down, it emits a photon, and that's light. That's what we see. But that is not true of dark matter. Dark matter won't interact strongly at all, and so the only way we see it is gravitationally. For example,
help me out here. Dark matter would be what I think of when I think of space. When I think of space, I think there's this Earth and it's this solid matter with, you know, people and trees and rock and lava in the middle. And then there's this atmosphere around it that's kind of dense. But then there's this black space beyond it that's full of nothing at all, except that if we go a great distance, we can find a planet. And a really great distance, we can find a star. Is that dark matter, that thing we call space? Or dark energy?
Is
that dark energy?
Is, what we think it is, it's individual particles that are in that space. So space itself is its own entity, but
space isn't. Like is space empty or not?
No.
Space is not empty.
Not. So in between our stars in our galaxy,
right.
There is matter. There are hydrogen atoms. There are
just
kind
of floating atoms in the, that are lost in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
They float around.
Yep.
They're just very non-dense, I guess.
Extremely undense. That's true.
In between those atoms, there is empty space, right?
So between stars. So between galaxies. Okay, so as you get farther and farther away from galaxies,
mm-hmm.
the density of stuff out there, and what I mean by stuff is the dark matter and hydrogen atoms, gets smaller and smaller.
And that, but there is actual space between things, right? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, hydrogen atoms, if they get closer together, if they get farther apart, there is an area between them that's literally nothing. That is space.
Oh, that's true. That's true. That's exactly right.
So there's space does exist. It's just that it can be more dense or less dense.
That's right. So I mean, all matter lives in space. And
right.
Then space, so all part. It's the density of particles that we're talking about here that live in that space.
Is it mostly hydrogen and helium? The sort of the simple things on the.
Well, okay, no. So it's mainly dark matter. It's dark matter is about 90%, and the rest of normal matter is a smaller 10%.
So is dark matter like a proton, an electron, or even smaller than that somehow?
It's probably a more massive particle. So it's a particle we have yet to detect. And there are many, many, many dark matter searches ongoing on Earth right now trying to detect the dark matter particle. We know it's out there. We know for sure because we can see the effect gravitationally in galaxies. But we have yet to discover that particle.
So the dark matter is dense enough that it actually can pull things, like with a gravitational pull.
It clusters. So what's nice is when you look at a galaxy, so like our Milky Way galaxy, we see the beautiful stars, the spiral arms, the bulge, all that kind of stuff. But the majority of it, 7 to 8 times of it, is dark matter. It's like a giant cloud of dark matter that we have yet to detect by visible light.
So what we don't see is more important than what we do see?
That's right. Oh, by far. That's again what makes us more insignificant.
So the stuff we don't see doesn't emit light because it's not dense enough to have protons, electrons bumping into each other?
It doesn't emit light because it's a type of particle that will not make an atom. This is why, we see light from a hydrogen and an electron. The electron will go to this higher energy state, drop back down, emit light. Dark matter won't do that.
Is dark matter... it doesn't consist of protons and electrons. It's something else that we don't know what it is.
It's that we believe it's a particle, but we don't know what that particle is.
What's a particle?
So
in layman's terms. It's a
proton,
thing.
An electron, quarks, these are all particles.
Okay, so it might be an electron without a proton or a proton without an electron.
It's not a normal particle that we know and love.
Okay, it's not a proton or an electron. It's some other such thing that we don't really know what it is.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Is
dark matter mostly in space, or is there any dark matter like right here on Earth? Is there dark matter in this room where I'm sitting?
There's dark matter that is going through our brains right now, without doubt.
Well, that's a little scary. So the force really is with us.
It's always with us. That's right. Let's talk about.
I mean, with Star Wars coming out, this movie. I'm just trying to understand this here. Maybe you're using the force. Maybe they're talking about dark matter.
That's perfect timing. That's right. Very good.
But dark energy is different from dark matter.
Dark energy is crazy. Dark energy is this problem that...
Dark energy is Darth Vader, basically. But go ahead. It's a problem. It's a crazy problem.
What?
I'm just trying to make sense of this all, folks. Dark energy is what?
It's okay. A dark energy is the phrase we use to express our ignorance of how the universe is expanding.
What is called dark energy? God, and be done with it.
I'm sure some people will. Now, what I've always said about dark energy is that it may not be dark and it may not be energy. It's just a phrase we use to express our ignorance.
Kind of like the Holy Roman Empire, but go ahead.
It's pretty much. Our universe is expanding much faster than what we originally thought. It's undergoing an accelerated expansion. This is what got a Nobel Prize in 2011. And that accelerated expansion, that's what we call...
The dark energy.
Oh, that's what we call our dark energy, yes, right.
So it's like the Big Bang exploded, but things are falling apart faster than we expected.
Well, it's weird. It's like negative gravity. It's as if, you know, you toss an apple in the air. So just imagine Newton. He tosses an apple in the air, it comes back down. He tosses it higher, it comes back down. He tosses it really high, it still comes back down. But now he tosses it as far as he can go, and all of a sudden it gets to some point and it takes off. That's dark energy.
Well,
it's weird.
But that's actually true on Earth. I mean, the example you gave, that'd be escape velocity, right? I mean, that's a spaceship. You throw a plane up in the air and it gets outside our atmosphere. It's a rocket now.
But it doesn't accelerate away, though. You're exactly right. But it won't accelerate away.
I see.
So this is what the universe is doing.
It's whatever is pulling our universe apart.
Exactly,
is something at the edges pulling it apart. Maybe there's some giant vacuum all at the very, very edge of the universe.
So maybe
Columbus's men were right, and we really do fall off the edge of the Earth. Only in this case, it'd be the universe.
Of the universe, that's right, the observable universe. Right. But there are so many. I have an experiment ongoing now. We're just about to start taking data. It's called HETEX. This is the Hobby Hubble Telescope, a dark energy experiment. We'll be taking data extremely soon, and we're going to take data for about 3 to 4 years. We're going to try to understand why the universe is expanding the way it is.
Well, just don't mess with dark energy too much, or Darth Vader grabs you around the neck and then bad things happen. We have to take another break, Doctor. We'll be right back with my greatest physics lesson ever right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Taking a break from politics for once, talking a little astrophysics with my guest, a professor of astrophysics at the Department of Astronomy at the University of Texas at Austin. His name is Dr. Carl Gephardt, and I've been having a great time. I've been trying every metaphor in the book, and basically he lets me know what works and what doesn't work, because metaphors are the only way I'm ever going to understand this stuff. But so far, I think I'm batting a B+, which would be pretty good in his class. So Dr. Gephardt, Einstein... Before Einstein was Isaac Newton, and Isaac Newton is the apple fall on head theory. You know, gravity attracts everything together, and Newton got a lot right. In general, for everyday living, Newton got a decent amount right, particularly for life on Earth.
That's right. So, you know, I would say for most of everything we do on Earth, Newton works exactly well. But fundamentally, it was wrong, and this is what Einstein did. So Newton had a fundamental misunderstanding of the nature of gravity.
Yeah, so
we're not quite there yet.
Now Einstein is. We're in an anniversary, right? This is the 100th year of Einstein's theory of gravity.
It's very exciting. Like about a week or two, maybe 2 weeks ago,
fantastic,
was the 100th anniversary of a paper that Einstein published on the laws of gravitation, and this, I consider, the most number one most important paper in all of science, and I know many other people do as well.
In all of science. Now, is this the famous E equals MC squared, or is that's the theory of relativity?
That's a famous equation, but in terms of a fundamental shift in our understanding of how a gravity works. No comparison.
So theory of relativity, he came up even later than this paper on
gravity. That was earlier.
Oh, that was earlier.
There were other people who were hinting at it, and he brought everything
together. So help us with gravitation. What is it that Einstein got that Newton didn't get? How did Einstein?
It's beautiful. He completely changed it. So it's like you have the Earth and the Sun. And what you said is that, and I think what everyone thinks is that there's this force, a gravitational force, that the Sun is pulling on the Earth, and the Earth is pulling on the Sun, and that's why the Sun and Earth are in orbit.
And that's Newtonian physics. That's Newtonian physics, right?
That's Newtonian. That there's a force.
Right, but we're wrong.
Said, he
goes, okay.
So what Einstein said, he says, no, a pulse out the window. What is happening is the Sun is causing a distortion of space, a distortion of space-time. It's like it's causing a divot in space. And the Earth is responding to that because now there's this curved space that's going towards the Sun. The Earth wants to fall in because it's like this curved space.
So the Sun is a giant vacuum cleaner, and the Earth is falling. It's pulling. It's kind of like, so correct me if I'm wrong. I'm using my metaphors again. It's kind of like if I want to get that ball on the bed, but I can't reach the ball, I might pull the sheets toward me, and the ball follows along because it's sitting in one of the little spaces in the sheets, and it sort of comes toward me. It might roll away even a little bit, but I'm not actually pulling the ball. I'm pulling the sheets between me and the ball.
You're almost there, and it's almost a really good analogy. What I would do is I would push down on the bed, and then you've curved space, and now the ball's going to respond to that curved space.
Okay. All right.
That's how it works. Yeah.
Fair enough. So the Sun is actually compacting the space around the Earth, and the Earth is kind of going toward the Sun in that compaction
of
space.
Right. And so what Einstein said is that space-time is a real entity. It's not just a void. It's a real entity, and mass warps space, and anything that goes through that space has to respond to that warp space.
Okay, now you have 4 minutes to explain to me the fourth dimension. The fourth dimension is time. I get space, kind of. I get the idea of everything collapses into one, gravity. That doesn't blow my mind yet. But what does blow my mind is somehow it's not just space, but space-time, and now my mind is blown. Explain time to me.
Okay. You all understand time. It's really easy. I mean, say you go ahead and meet someone at some point. How do you tell someone?
Yeah, my radio show ends in 3 minutes, so I get time. But how does time change other than moving a second forward every second every day?
I can't explain that in 2 minutes. Let me think about that one.
What did Einstein teach us about time?
Oh, that time is relative. Your clock will act differently in different. If you accelerate, if you're accelerating, your clock, your time is running slower than if you're not accelerating.
So there is time standing still.
If you go at the speed of light, time stands still. You do not age. That is correct.
But if you go at no speed at all, then time is
maximum,
maximum time.
That's maximum aging. That's right. You're not moving.
So if the Earth were to stop still, we'd all age faster because we're not moving.
That's right. And so if you don't want to age, just start moving all over the place.
See, they tell you exercise is good for you. There's proof right there. The faster you go, the less you age. Okay, I realize it's microseconds, but I'll take it. Hey, so does time get bent by gravity?
Yes. Time is warped by gravity. That's right. So because of gravity, it's an accelerated field. So on Earth, we are aging less than if we're up on space.
We're aging less than if we're up on space, but the Earth is moving. It's going around the Sun. Does the space stand still? Wouldn't we age more because we're more stationary?
No, because we're in a gravitational field on Earth and we're in a gravitational field around the Sun. Because we're in that gravitational field,
what does it matter whether we're on Earth or not? We're still going in the same gravitational pull and we're in the same divot of that bed.
Oh, I'm sorry. When I meant space, I meant very, very far away.
You meant like way outside our galaxy.
Way outside, yes. I'm sorry. Yeah,
then you would age more you'd age more because you're not moving.
Yes. That's correct, because you're not accelerating. Accelerating is the key here.
It's not even velocity, not even how fast you're going, but how fast you increase that
mass.
So what that means is, as we're drawn in with infinite speed into the center of a black hole, as we're being torn apart, at least we won't age. So we have that to look forward to. Dr. Carl Gephardt, thank you. You've blown my mind and that of my listeners. Thank you for teaching us all about astronomy. This is Mark Levine. If you want to make a comment on today's show, just go to Twitter and tweet me at Mark Levine Talk. I'm signing off.